No matter what happens in the end with Donald Trump, he's already proven one thing. Using appeals to fear and anger works in drawing huge crowds. The burning question of the moment is how this could happen in an advanced democracy like ours. In his new book, Political Animals, How Our Stone Age Brain Gets in the Way of Smart Politics, historian Rick Shankman uses science to explain why so many people are susceptible to politicians' manipulative appeals, and why they don't seem to care when politicians are caught lying. Rick Shankman is an award-winning investigative reporter, a New York Times bestselling author, and the author of the book Just How Stupid Are We? Again, his new book is Political Animals, How Our Stone Age Brain Gets in the Way of Smart Politics. And we welcome Rick Shankman to the roundtable this morning. Rick, thank you very much for being with us.
I am thrilled to be here.
Thank you very much. So what brought you to this subject of wanting to look at these political animals?
Well, 8 years ago, I wrote a book called Just How Stupid Are We? Facing the Truth About the American Voter. And what I wanted to understand was how a majority of the Americans on the eve of the Iraq War could believe that Saddam Hussein had attacked us on 9/11, and that that was the explanation for why we were going to war in Iraq. That made no sense to me. So I wrote a book that traced the history of the decline of American knowledge about politics. And at the end of the book, I felt like I had done a pretty good job, and I was basically trying to alert the country to what I thought was a really important problem. Then somebody wrote on an Amazon discussion board, hey, you should look into the science behind this problem. And, you know, I'm a historian, and I thought, well, that's interesting. I never would have thought about looking at science. So I started to investigate, and I spent the next 5 years working on it, and this book is the result.
And this is a lot of science. This is neuroscience, evolutionary psychology, behavioral psychology, that ultimately looks at why we think these things. Now, it would seem that the baseline to this is that if you hammer away at something and you tell people over and over and over and over again, that is eventually what they will believe. Is that a good baseline?
Well, let me start with the mystery that I set out to try to understand. And here's the mystery. We have 86 billion neurons in our brain, far more neurons in our brain than any other animal. And yet our politics often seems dumb. So how can we bridge that disconnect? What is going on there? And what I figured out was, after reading a lot of different science papers and books and textbooks, that our instincts lead us in the wrong direction. Our brain was basically designed to help hunter-gatherers during the Stone Age, a 2.5 million year period, to help them grapple with the problems that they face as hunter-gatherers, not to help people in the 21st century grapple with the problems that we face in a multicultural, very, very complicated world that involves not 150 people, which was the typical community for hunter-gatherers, but millions and billions of people. That's really the problem that we face. There is this mismatch between our brain instincts and the world that we find ourselves in. And that's really what I was trying to solve.
The subtitle of the book, How Our Stone Age Brain Gets in the Way of Smart Politics. So are politicians using what they know about us on purpose to get what they want?
That's a great question. And the answer is yes. All you have to do is look at Donald Trump's campaign. What does he talk about? He talks about immigration and Mexicans coming across the border, and they're rapists and they're murderers. And he also talks about Muslim terrorists. Those are the two big issues. And what do those do? Those induce fear and anger. But it's not just some kind of amorphous fear. You don't need a 300-page book to tell you that, hey, he's appealing to our fear. But where I try to explain a little bit more subtly what's going on, I borrow from the insights of evolutionary psychology, and here's what the evolutionary psychology community has identified as the problem. Donald Trump, when he is talking about these groups outside America who are posing a danger to us. He is triggering the fire alarm bias that all human beings are born with. What's the fire alarm bias? It's basically a fire alarm that's in your head that goes off as soon as you perceive a threat. And it's like the smoke detector in your home. It's set at a very sensitive point so that just the least bit of a threat and it starts ringing loudly in your head. And what he's been doing is making it clang, 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 clang. And why is this something that we pay attention to? Well, we pay attention to it because back in the Stone Age, of course, if you ignored a fire alarm, you possibly could wind up dead. So what he's doing is he's triggering this alarm, this ancient instinct, which is a fear of the other, a fear of somebody who doesn't look like us or talk like us or seem like us. And we are having this instinctive reaction and we can't help it. It's automatic. So I think it helps to understand the science behind what's going on in our brain if we're then going to be able to deal with it. The saving grace is we have higher order cognitive thinking. So we don't have to just have caveman, Stone Age brain politics. We can get beyond that if we use higher order cognitive thinking. We can reflect on it.
You make the point in the book that we so often go with our instincts when it comes to politics. And when that happens, our gut instinct fails us.
We go with our instincts because there are a million issues that come up all day long in our daily lives, and we're going on instinct all the time. You don't have time in the course of a day to rethink everything. Once your brain settles on some belief or a behavior, you tend to stick with it unless you get a really good reason for changing your mind or changing your behavior, because we can't keep relitigating all the issues that we wind up settling. We'd never be able to get out of bed in the morning. When you climb out of bed, just to use the most basic example, you know that your feet are going to hit the floor and the floor is going to hold you up. That's because of experience has taught you that. So we try not to relitigate that issue anymore. You have to relearn that every single day you wake up in the morning, put your feet on the floor. Well, that also has a parallel in politics. Once you make up your mind about some issue, Barack Obama's a good president or a bad president, you tend not to change your mind. So this is something that politicians are cognizant of, and they are always trying to take advantage of. So what I'm trying to do is say to Americans, hey, get smart. Otherwise, you can be manipulated by the politicians. They'll just apply to your instincts and get you to respond instinctually. Just in the New York Times this morning, there was a wonderful little article about President Obama and his State of the Union address, and a woman in Iowa who said, hey, she wants to take a look at the president and really get a close view of him and decide whether or not she trusts what he's saying. Well, this is all about people wanting to have some kind of personal experience with politicians. The problem is we don't. Our brain thinks us, fools us. It tricks us into thinking that we have a personal relationship with politicians because the television set sits in our living room, in our bedroom, and these guys come visit us in our most intimate spaces of our homes. But in fact, we're not really getting to know them. Back in the hunter-gatherer stage, we actually did know our leaders. We knew them because we were living with them. We were working with them. They were probably often members of our own family. They were kin. That's not the situation today. But our brain tricks us into thinking that because we can see them, that we therefore know them. And that is just not true.
And we could say the same thing about our talk show hosts.
That's true.
But so, I mean, at some point we have to understand that. I mean, people who even come up to me and will say, you know, I feel like I know you because I listen to you while I'm in my car every morning, but then they realize that they don't.
Well, there is plenty of social science that shows that people actually do think that they know people. Let's take Ronald Reagan as a perfect example. Americans had seen him for decades before he got into politics as a movie star. Then he became the governor of California for 8 years. Then he runs for president. By the time he ran for president in 1980, we'd had decades of experience with Ronald Reagan, and we thought that we knew him. Here's the funny thing about this. His own son, Ron Reagan Jr., in a memoir that came out a few years ago, confessed, "I did not understand my own father. I didn't get him." His biographer, Edmund Morris, after working on a book, Reagan, for 10 years, and having spoken to him in countless conversations and followed him around the White House during his eight-year presidency, finally confessed, "I really couldn't get a handle on him. I didn't know who he was." But the American people were convinced because they'd seen an image of Ronald Reagan that had been projected to them on Hollywood and then in television commercials and in snippets on the news over the years. They felt like they knew him. You see the disconnect?
I do. So what do we do with this information and after reading this book? How do we not succumb to that and make decisions that are indeed based on our beliefs and the truth?
Well, it takes me 300 pages in the book to explain what all the problems are. And then I end on a very optimistic note. And I was surprised by the findings of science that made me, turned me really into an optimist, because honestly, I wasn't all that much of an optimist when I started. I ended my last book thinking, okay, I've got to offer some kind of optimistic message. But honestly, if you'd pressed me, I would have said, I'm not really terribly optimistic. But after reading the scientific studies, I'm much more optimistic. Here's an example of why. One of the wonderful findings of social science is that we do change our minds even after being wedded for a long period of time to a particular viewpoint. We do change our minds. And what is it that changes our mind? It's anxiety. We're all born with the emotional capacity to become anxious. And while that usually is associated with unpleasantness, nobody likes to feel anxious, it's the brain's way of getting real with the world. So if there is a mismatch between a belief that you hold dearly and the facts in the world as you are confronting them over and over and over again, eventually you will wind up feeling anxious. And when you feel anxious, the social science studies show, you have an open mind. When the burden of hanging on to your old opinion, your existing opinion, becomes greater than the burden of considering changing your opinion, you will then be open to changing your opinion. That's wonderfully optimistic. That's a wonderful message. And that's what the science was teaching me.
Rick Shankman is an historian and author. His new book, Political Animals, How Our Stone Age Brain Gets in the Way of Smart Politics. The book is published by Basic Books. Rick, thanks very much for joining us this morning.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
Best of luck. Thank you very much. Again, the title of the book, Political Animals, published by Basic Books. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.